There's our Waka music with the man. That's Dr. Jack Russell Weinstein. He's a professor of philosophy at the University of North Dakota, and he joins us about once a month for Philosophical Currents. Jack, it's Thanksgiving time. I hope you have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
Oh, I am looking forward to it. It's actually my favorite holiday of the year. I cook for a couple days in anticipation. We have friends come over. We've been hosting it. This is, I think, our 23rd year in a row hosting it. And I like it because nobody gives any gifts. It's all about eating and it's all about camaraderie. And there's less pressure and greed and preparation in the long term. You're not spending 30 days, 60 days, 90 days wondering what can you give someone to show them you love them. Just being there is an expression of love, and it's definitely my favorite holiday over the year. Plus I like to eat.
And you must like to cook. We shared with me off mic what you were getting ready for the table. It's a good lead-in, Jack, to what we want to talk about today, and that's community and family dynamics around the Thanksgiving holiday. It's generally a time to strengthen families and community bonds, I guess, in a philosophical sense, isn't it? Isn't that what it's supposed to be?
Well, that's definitely what it's supposed to be. But like all of these events, it will express fissures in the family and people will fight about whatever it is people will fight about. But I think the first element of Thanksgiving is just being present. I think that being able to travel, being able to sit next to someone, being able to share a table, that is an expression of camaraderie and collectivity that we don't get very often. You know, Christmas, as beautiful as it can be, is about gathering around the Christmas tree and you go visit other people's houses and you have carolers and you have all of these different things going on in different locations. Thanksgiving takes place in one location and everyone is there at the same time. Everyone starts to eat at the same time. And, you know, It's just a celebration of being present. And for those people who struggle with that, or for those people who don't have a community, it can actually be very, very lonely and very alienating. Setting aside the politics of the holiday, just not having people to share it with can be really hurtful for a lot of people.
I think tradition lends itself more to Thanksgiving, perhaps, than any other holiday. We cook the same. We gather pretty much the same. And like you alluded to, we're not, you know, giving a gift that needs to be remembered a year from now or 10 years from now. It's just our time. And so to me, it seems it's really a time of reflection, or it maybe should be a time of reflection for those of us, I guess, who are lucky enough to have Thanksgiving to share with someone else.
I think you're absolutely right. Human beings are tradition-based animals. The vast majority of our meanings are imagination, the stories that we tell, how we got here, what it represents, what it says about the future. The idea that we have this lineage that extends to a mythology about the beginning of our culture, and that we as a family are participants in that. We have this direct connection to the story that we tell children about the first Thanksgiving, about settling the new world, about ideally making friends with people of difference. And by participating in that tradition, we are affirming our loyalty to that story. Again, it's a mythology. It's not accurate. It's not true. But that's secondary to the fact that we are affirming that we wish it were true. And we are affirming that we want to be participants in the ideal circumstance that allows us to gather as friends, as loved ones, as a community. And I think given that historical background, there is no ritual in our culture that ties together more family and community than Thanksgiving. Our neighbor who sits at the table with us is as much a family member as our brother and sister for this one day. The guest, the girlfriend or boyfriend, the stranger you invite in, every year we have an errant student who ends up coming by because something happened and they need a person to sit with. For that day, they are full members of your family. And when you open your house to someone and fully open your house to someone, you're expressing a kind of love that is almost biblical in a sense. In the Hebrew scriptures, one of the things that makes the patriarch Abraham so special is that Abraham always welcomed the strangers. He'd stand at the edge of the encampment and he'd look to see who was coming in and who was new, and he would always welcome them into his tent. That's what Thanksgiving is. It's an embracing of the stranger. It's an embracing of the community member who for at least this small period of time is fully a member of your family.
I think it's also, Jack, the best time for intergenerational relationships to be cultivated, improved, rekindled for families, because again, our kids aren't going to run off and go play with their new toys. We're just together for that one time with the newest baby to the oldest grandparent, or maybe great grandparent or great uncle.
I think that's also right. This year we're having our first grandchild, not my grandchild, but the first grandchild of the group coming, and that is going to be a really special thing, a whole new generation. And I like this idea of rekindling the connection between the generations. It's one of the reasons why everyone has the intention, at least, of foregoing the politics. Everyone has the intention, at least, of putting up with the person who doesn't behave well, or trying not to be the person who doesn't behave well. It doesn't always work out that way, and Thanksgiving can bring out the dysfunction in families in a way that other holidays don't as well, because the stakes are so intimate, because there's nothing on the table other than those interpersonal connections. But we all start by wiping the slate clean and by trying to be our best self and hoping that our relatives are their best selves as well.
Sometimes that doesn't happen. I reflect back just to an episode of, I bet you didn't watch it, Jack, but Mandy and Georgie's first marriage. It's in the lineage of Young Sheldon, right? It's the spinoff of that show. And here we were at Thanksgiving, and the prodding began, and people storm out. Why is it that that happens from a philosophical perspective, that we can't rise above all of those things that might tear us apart, and then all of a sudden, sometimes we allow those to get in the way?
I think it's probably because all of this is really about love. That when you have a political battle with someone who won't listen to you, who won't hear your side, who won't give you credence, who dismisses you, it feels as if they're dismissing you whole hog. It feels like they are saying to you, I don't love you enough to listen to you. I don't love you enough to give you your own space. And so the conflict becomes ever more intense, ever more intimate, ever more threatening, because you enter the Thanksgiving table vulnerable. You enter the Thanksgiving table as open as you are capable of being. And when someone rejects that, especially for reasons that are really personal to you, like your personal politics, it feels like a wholesale rejection. And sometimes when you're faced with that kind of rejection, all you can do is walk away, because the damage that you would do if you didn't walk away would be irreconcilable. There are things that you would say that you couldn't unsay. There are actions that you would take that you couldn't untake. And so sometimes running away is the healthiest and the best means for keeping the family together.
We had a person in our family a long time ago who struggled with being able to give thanks when bad things had happened. Why should we pause to give thanks, even though everything hasn't went our way, maybe recently?
Hope is the core of the human experience. If we were creatures that couldn't promise ourselves that better things would come along, we would be despondent. We would be depressed. We'd also give up on science. We'd give up on knowledge acquisition. We wouldn't write that book. We wouldn't start the new movie. We wouldn't have a sense of the future. The thing that drives us as human beings is the fact that new things are going to come, better things are going to come. This inherent optimism that we have is survival level emotion. And if you can't find the good, even the little bits of good around you, then it becomes harder to hold on to that hope. When you're stuck in this sense of this deep depressive void, when you are either struggling with your own mental health problems or just looking at the state of the world and saying nothing is going the way that you want it to go, it becomes much harder to imagine a better future. It becomes much harder to imagine a circumstance in which we should strive for something. Why should we strive if things are only going to get worse? Why should we make an effort if things are going to deteriorate? This tension between finding things to be grateful for and holding on to our capacity for hope is an essential part of what it means to be a human being.
So we've talked about giving thanks as an individual and the need to try to do that, even in the toughest of times. What's our responsibility to the community? And how does giving thanks allow the community, the communal health of maybe our group or even our wider group, take center stage, if you will?
You know, these are personal questions, and they vary radically from circumstance to circumstance, because there are some people for whom just putting food on the table is an accomplishment. And there are some people for whom just having one other person at the table is an accomplishment. And so cultivating to the community that you have is enough in many regards. For me, the way that I manifest this responsibility is by looking for friends, colleagues, students who are desperate for someone to be with. And so, like I said, there's almost always not a stranger at the table, but a newcomer at the table. For other people, that may manifest itself in working in a soup kitchen and feeding the poor. For other people, Thanksgiving is a good time to give a donation to food banks or other charities or things like that. Sometimes the charity takes the form of giving your uncle another chance. Sometimes the charity takes the form of being open-minded to the fact that this person that you might not like may in fact be a good person who's fighting their own battles and who is struggling to be the best person they can. And that's why it can be so disappointing when they're not. That's why it's so disappointing when the same dysfunctional person comes every year and pokes at you in the same way. Because again, we're starting the slate clean, and we're giving people another shot. It's not three strikes you're out in Thanksgiving. It's 25 strikes and you're out in Thanksgiving. And so what responsibility you have towards the community depends entirely both on what you need your community to be and how much you have of yourself to give at any one time. And some years you have a lot to give, and some years you have very, very little.
We're enjoying our conversation, our monthly conversation on philosophical currents with Dr. Jack Russell Weinstein. He's a Chester Fritz Distinguished Professor of Philosophy and the Director of the Institute for Philosophy and Public Life, and the host of public radio show Why, Philosophical Discussions About Everyday Life. And of course, he hails from Grand Forks and is a professor at the University of North Dakota. Dr. Weinstein, should we shy away from using Thanksgiving as a space to resolve conflicts or just work to strengthen family relationships or just be more organic, happy, and not worry about maybe some of those things that are troubling us or troubling those who are with us?
Well, I'm not a therapist.
I was asking that as though you were, and maybe I apologize for that.
No, but that's okay. I think the mistake that people often make when it comes to resolving interpersonal issues is confusing those things that are public and those things that are private. And so if I have an interpersonal problem with someone and it is a private one-on-one issue, then if I want to resolve it on Thanksgiving, I can do it by pulling a person aside and having a private conversation with them, trying to do it over the table in front of an audience. That creates tremendous damage or potential damage. At the same time, if I have a conflict with a family as a whole, or if I have a public issue, then being able to say just to someone, hey, at the table, hi, everyone. I just want you to know how grateful I am to be here. I just want you to know that I love you all. You know, just doing something like that goes a long way towards opening up the possibility of reconciliation. But I do think that as a general rule for most people, when things are really intimate and really painful, and when you're really vulnerable, the more people that are involved in the discussion, the harder it is to control, and the more painful the kickback can be. And so I personally have found that resolving the most difficult issues gets put aside for Thanksgiving. We pretend we're a family so that we can actually be a family. And I have found it harder to do that on other holidays than I have on Thanksgiving. I offer a caveat that I think was probably obvious now, that when it comes to Thanksgiving, for whatever reason, I'm a romantic. I'm a romantic about Thanksgiving the way that lots of people are romantics about Christmas. And so some of the things that I say apply to other holidays, like Christmas, like Hanukkah, like Diwali. You can have multiple, I'm trying to figure out how to say this. Your experience may vary to mine, but there's something about Thanksgiving, because it is a mythology that connects us to our community, there's something that really caters to the romance of it in a way that isn't childish. Christmas is childish in a very important sense. And I don't mean that negatively. I don't mean that in the sense that it's not sophisticated or not important. I mean that Christmas is childish in the sense that we are centered on the children. We're centered on giving the gifts. We're centered on creating an experience that your children will look back on when they're 20, 30, 40, think positively about and pass on to their own children. Thanksgiving is a holiday for adults. Thanksgiving is a holiday for peers. Thanksgiving is a holiday for a collective that separates itself, right? That's why there's the children's table often, because the children are having their own Thanksgiving and the adults are having their Thanksgiving. And that means that the content of the conversation is going to be different and the nature of the love is going to be different, because it's not necessarily maternal or paternal. It's also sibling-based. It's also love thy neighbor. It's also welcoming the stranger, to repeat myself. Thanksgiving is a more adult and more layered holiday because we are sitting at a table as equals in a way that we don't when we are giving the children gifts.
Don't judge me, Jack, but I've told my wife that I want to sit at the children's table. And that I want to have that time with my grandkids in a way that I just don't get to during the year. But I think I'm going to lose that battle. Jack, does the practice of giving gratitude, we talked about not wanting to make Thanksgiving a lasting negative experience, but isn't it true that the practice of giving gratitude during Thanksgiving or any other time of the year doesn't have a lasting impact on how we then relate to others throughout the year?
Gratitude is one of the magic bullets. And all of the evidence suggests that being grateful for what you have helps you out of depression, helps you out of anxiety, helps you out of difficult mental circumstances. Gratitude also opens you up towards other people and lets you create a space where you can give as well as to receive. And so all of those things are preconditions for relating to others. And by giving gratitude for what you have, you're not being solipsistic. You're not focusing solely on yourself. You're recognizing the gifts that the universe has given you. Now, let's take that one step forward and ask, what happens when you show gratitude for the other person? What happens if you show gratitude towards the person sitting next to you, saying, I am glad you are here. I am glad you are sharing this meal with me. Most traditions, most cultures, the sharing of meals is something special. The breaking of bread together is something incredibly intimate and important. And so to be able to say to someone, I am glad I am doing this with you, is a way of showing a kind of welcoming and love and openness that the culture has made a space for, that the culture has declared, this is what eating together is supposed to do. And so if you are incapable of gratitude, you're stuck in your own isolation booth, and you're angry and you're bitter and you're despondent and you're resentful. And that's not fun to sit next to at a table, but it's also not fun to be. And so I think you're right to focus on gratitude because, again, to repeat the metaphor, gratitude is the magic bullet. Gratitude is one of the things that takes us out of our most self-oriented, self-destructive behaviors that really hurt us in the long run, and that if we can manage to cultivate, gratitude is an adjunct to the medication that we take. Gratitude is an adjunct to the therapy. Gratitude is an adjunct to the hugs and the kisses and the love and the stories and all of these sorts of things. And when you are alone, when you're sad, when you're struggling, it's incredibly hard to find the gratitude. But they tell me that if you find the gratitude, it can move the mental health needle in ways that almost nothing else can.
Besides the meal, Jack, on Thanksgiving Day, do you have another tradition you want to share with us? I'll tell you mine that I just look forward to. Maybe it's the romantic part of me as well. I wrangle as many grandkids as will sit still and try my best to watch the Macy's parade with them.
We, for years and years, all of the kids would get together and write and put on a play. And it was always completely incomprehensible and completely chaotic, and the kids wouldn't remember the lines, and the little kids would be running around and doing stuff. And now, because all the kids are in college, except for the new grandchild who's a year and a half, what we do is we talk about and joke about the play. The number of times someone mentions the incomprehensible play that the kids give is almost comical in and of itself. And for me, my daughter is not going to be here this year because she's in college. And a handful of the other kids now have graduated college and they're out. And I miss that. I miss that generation. And that's going to be the hardest aspect for me. But I take solace in the fact that so does everyone else, and that at some point they are going to be bringing their children, most likely, over to our house. And there's that hope in the future again. I look forward to the day when it is the grandchildren that make the incomprehensible play and we can tell them about how their parents didn't make sense either.
I might steal that idea, Jack, and then I'll let you know how that turned out.
Please do.
Happy Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving to you, Craig. May it be a wonderful one full of food and love and family. And may your joy flow out of your household into the community surrounding you.
I'd like for that to happen, Jack. Dr. Jack Russell Weinstein, he's a Chester Fritz Distinguished Professor of Philosophy at the University of North Dakota. He joins us each and every month on Main Street for Philosophical Currents. Jack, it's always a pleasure. Happy holidays. He's like a doctor with a real good rep. And when